Welcome into another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. We are live on site at Hayden Field, Xavier University, for the site of the second annual Xavier University Basketball World Series. And we're here with one of the team captains, Coach Farr. Coach Farr, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Couldn't be better. James, you put this roster together. We have you as a 4.5 run favorite entering in today's game. Talk about your drafting strategy. What were you looking for there? Obviously, you took J.P. McCura first, which I thought was a great choice.
Starting with J.P. McCura, his numbers just really impressed me from last year. He had four or five from the batting, actually. He had played great defensively in the outfield. He's an all-around athlete. There was no question he was our first pick. He just built the team around him.
Was there any tendency or thought maybe to picking Coach Mack first, just maybe to butter him up for some playing time or anything like that?
You know what, Coach Mack, I think he's going to be the biggest steal of this draft. I didn't expect him to go as high as he did with Remy Abel's first pick. So
were you counting on Abel just being dumb? Is that what you were saying?
You know what? I wasn't counting on Abel being dumb. He had some tendencies, but you know what? I thought he was going to go with Jalen Reynolds at his first pick.
MVP of last year.
So I'm like, okay, I'm going to get Coach Mack at third, you know?
Which, by the way, we're 5 minutes away from the first pitch. No sign of Jalen Reynolds yet.
That's not a surprise.
You know, Jalen does his little marquee brand entering,
And he's a guy who doesn't need warm-ups, right?
No, he doesn't need any warm-ups.
Hey, James, I'm going to ask you a basketball question. Coming in your senior year, with Matt being graduated now, there's a lot of opportunity for you, both in terms of playing time and production. What are some things you're working on this summer to get better for your last go-round?
You know, I've worked on that every day, and I continue to work on that. I didn't perfect anything last year. I had some strong, I had some strength, I had some weaknesses, I've just been working on that every day.
How difficult last year was it for you from a standpoint of you knew you were going to play, but one game, depending on how Matt and Jalen and whoever else fit in the lineup or was in foul trouble or whatever, it might be 20 minutes one game, it might be 7 minutes the next because of the matchup. How difficult was it for you to just find a role and find a comfort zone out on the court?
You know what? It was very weird, but when the season goes by, you got to take things day by day. What I decided to do is I sat by myself and thought, what else can I do to impact this team? You know, one of those things I did very well last year was rebound.
Oh, yeah.
And the ending that we had to last year, I would do it all over again. It's very tough, but, I just stayed the course. Teammates, having guys like Matt and Dee and the rest of these guys on this field, just helped me out. They saw I was down at some points, and they picked me up. And, we were able to make a Sweet 16 this year. I wouldn't trade that for the world. I'd do it all over again.
What was that run like? I mean, you obviously that's what you think of when you come to a school like this. You want to make that type of run. What was it like? Because you're on the bubble with 2 weeks of the Big East play left. Then you guys catch fire and start playing the best basketball of the season at the right time, which is your goal. How much fun was that?
Oh, it was unbelievable. One day you're in New York playing in Madison Square Garden. The next you're in Jacksonville, and a couple of days later you're in L.A. You're going all over the place, and I'm only used to seeing things like that on TV. I never thought I'd be a part of that, but it was unbelievable. I can't even explain it. You have to be there to go through that.
All right. Well, it's almost your time for you to get started, so we'll let you get back to the game. But Jim, right before we let you go, you set the message boards on fire a couple weeks ago. They tweeted out that picture of everyone lifting for the first day. Everyone thinks you've put on about 300 pounds and become the Hulk. Is that true, or are you still James Farr?
I'm still James Farr, but I have put on a couple more pounds of muscle. That's one of my main points that I want to get better at. Just stronger, just be bigger in the paint, get a little bit wider. I haven't gone home this summer. Ever since school ended, I've taken intersession classes for 2 weeks, and the first summer session and second summer session classes. I've been here all summer, haven't gone home, except for a couple weekends. But I'm really invested, this is my last goal, man. I really want to walk out with at least two rings and say that I've got to a Sweet 16 or better.
All right, predictions for the game. What are you telling us?
Team Farr, all the way. I think we'll win by 10 runs. I'm very confident in my team.
I see we
right
do have a Jalen Reynolds sighting.
Okay, Jalen Reynolds has made his way into the building.
He does not look so confident right now.
He is on Team Abel, so not very confident, apparently. James, thanks for joining us, man.
All right,
appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right, we're back here at Hayden Field.
After one.
It is
Team 4-5, Team Able 1.
There you go. And the strategy there in the first inning for Team 4 was he came hitted at Jalen Reynolds.
Yeah.
Who was in center field, left center, somewhere out there in the outfield.
I don't think it was real defined what position he was playing. He seemed to just pick an area to cover and had some trouble, I would say. But real impressed by J.P. McCura scoring from first on a single, standing up, after he refused to move up on two fly balls. So
I'll get my...
Yeah, we're talking about your strikeout. Larry Austin's back here catching for Team 4. Wants to make sure we're talking about his strikeout.
I didn't see Larry bat in the first inning, so as far as I'm concerned, it didn't happen.
Meeting off the team, Chris Bond.
And we're here with Xavier beat writer from the Inquirer, Shannon Russell. Shannon, we haven't seen you since basketball season. What do you do? Tennis, girls, softball? What else have you been up to this summer?
Pretty much wherever they send me. So, yes, I've covered state softball, girls' state softball for quite a few years. So I did that. I went to Akron. I also write feature stories, fill in, have an all-star game, getting ready for the restrooms that might open, just kind of wherever they need help.
You had a great moment at the All-Star game. You talked to the mayor, Sean Casey, after he caught that home run derby ball. What was that like?
Well, first, the little backstory is that Paul Davis, the Bengals writer, was in the press box, and he's
out of D-Town, Jalen Reynolds,
as I did in the Reds press box. So I'm running to the trying to find Sean in his little luxury box while Paul was doing the same. We met up in the middle, so we kind of tag teamed it, and Sean was great. He came out. Sorry, I'm watching Jalen.
It's quite
the
sight.
Let's just describe what just happened. Jalen sliced the ball down the right field line. He's right-handed. Sort of an opposite field, and James Farr had to make about a 150-yard run to get to it and didn't quite get there. But Jalen had forgotten to run to first, so when the ball fell in foul territory, he had to trot down there. So sorry, Shannon.
It's okay. So Paul Daner and I caught up with Sean Casey, and he was so super excited to talk to the media, as he always is. Came out, shook our hands, like girlfriends, and Paul did video, and I asked a few questions, and so it was cool that he caught that foul ball. He was just elated.
Yeah, the All-Star game was a fun event. I thought Cincinnati represented itself really well. How much were you down there for?
That is not you just coming to the Derby.
There were a bunch of press conferences on Monday before the Derby. I went there, did a story on Chapman, then covered the Home Run Derby, helped cover it, and then the next day was back to the All-Star game. So it was kind of a crazy 2 days. So.
Yeah, definitely. And this week, on the Xavier side of things, you've talked to the biggest celebrity in Xavier University over the last 5 years, I think, Matt Stainbrook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's just become – he's taken on a life of its own ever since your Uber story, which that's the one thing. We've been talking about that forever. You wrote that story. Did you have any idea that it was going to catch on the way it did?
No, and I was kind of like, by the end of the season, even now, I'm like, all right, you know, he drives Uber. Jeez.
I'm surprised no one, like – because the NBA guy, like a lot of these people have had multiple cracks at him now, and it's still the story that keeps coming back.
I know.
Like you'd think they wouldn't ask him. He's an interesting guy, has a lot to talk about. I'm surprised no one has tried to deviate from that at all.
I'm surprised too, or the fact that Uber didn't try and kind of give him a deal or something, you know, now that he's gone to college.
Right.
He was great to talk to. I'll tell you, Matt is one of the most athletes I've ever dealt with, Xavier. And another good thing is he returns phone calls. So that's good. And so he was talking about his two summer league stints, and he played for the Indiana Pacers and then Golden State Warriors, and sounded like he had a really great time, especially with the Warriors.
I was going to say, he said, you know, I wasn't bitter about playing for the Pacers, but he never really got in.
No.
And it never really seemed, but like, he went to the Warriors, and it's like, you saw the guys on the bench, the coaching staff, everyone was like all excited when he would get in the game, and the game he was playing against Alex Kirk, and he was hitting him with the dream shake and the little hook shots, like, it seemed like, oh my God, like these people really like him and are considering him all of a sudden. And I think it seems like he's prepared to go and play overseas. Is that kind of the feeling you got?
99% that he thinks he's playing overseas. He knew about 5 places he thought he'd go, but he's prepared. His agent's still working things out, trying to find the best fit for him. But, you know, he can do really well overseas and, you know, make a good living over there. So either way, he's going to continue playing basketball.
Yeah, there's a nice history of Xavier players going over there and really making.
Next up for Team Able, Edmund Summers.
Justin Dolman as well, I believe he was in the first team for Eurobasket last year. So another guy who's really had really made a nice career for himself in Spain.
And even recently, Travis Taylor's done really well. Josh Duncan. I mean, there's just a lot of people. It's actually a really good story.
Yeah, Jamel McLean is still playing over there and doing well. So a lot of different guys have caught on and kind of. I mean, I think it becomes a little easier when you have sort of that pipeline of several guys have done it. It's like, here's the experiences to look for. Here's the experiences to avoid. Right. I think it becomes easier as a program to start setting guys up for that path when you've had so many do it. Now,
Shannon, we'll get to the Maurice Claret story in a second, but I want to talk about McKinday London, who's up there right now.
No, that's Edmund.
Oh, that's Edmund.
That's how tall Edmund Sumner is, by the way. Dan just thought he was McKinday London.
Yeah.
But yeah, but Edmund and McKinday sort of go in the same box because both guys were redshirted last year. Highly freshmen that we're really looking forward to seeing. And what's your takeaway? I mean, what do you think of those guys? What do you think their role is going to be this year?
You know, I'm really interested in seeing how Edmund fits in the most, just because we saw so little of him last year, and I'm assuming, based on he's moving right now, that he's not in any pain with his knees and the tendonitis. But just having that gap at point guard and not knowing where he might be able to fit in, and his athleticism and his size, you know, I think it's really going to be fun to see how he fits in that picture. As far as McKinday, like, he practiced with the team all last year. He's, I don't know where he is, if I haven't seen him on here, but last time I saw him, He's trying to bang with the guys, so he's had that experience now to transition to the court, especially with the East. Who knows, but you know, as a freshman, I'm so excited to see both of them this year if they can break the team. I am too. I think with McKinday especially, it's going to be just based on need for the team. Like, they don't need him to step in and fill a role, so he's going to really have to go and win it from someone.
And I think that's going to be tough for him. But when you look at Edmund, he's a guy that they're planning on playing as many minutes as he's ready to give them, because talent-wise, he gives them something they don't otherwise have.
Right.
And I think, you know, we saw that last year, his speed, his quickness, what he can bring defensively. He could potentially play the point guard position, which is a big question mark going into this year. I think that's going to be the key going into the season is how Edmund progresses. Dan, you mentioned the Maurice Claret. Obviously, Shannon, you wrote about that. What was sort of the takeaway from the – well, I mean, first of all, tell us what Maurice Claret did, the former Ohio State running back, and then what was the takeaway that Coach Mack sort of told you?
Sure. This happened All-Star Week, so I knew it was happening. I was able to get to it. But I talked to Maurice afterward, talked to Coach afterward, got some pictures from it. And basically, Coach Mack ran into Maurice at a Grainer's downtown. Happenstance, but had known that Maurice was doing speaking engagements and wanted to have him talk to the team, which, you know, every year, bigger things and speakers, whether it's Port Kellogg, whether it's Maurice Claret, just to give guys different, you know, advice, perspective, ask questions, that kind of thing. It's just ongoing, like, continuing education.
Right.
But Maurice Claret was really interesting. I watched every part of the video they sent it to Xavier. I mean, see it, and he was
next
very
up for team four,
he was very
Miles
fun.
Davis.
He talked about the mistakes he made and how he regretted what he did, but he rejected help all along the way, from Ohio State to he was with Denver very briefly. People were always trying to help him, and he was always like, I got it. And he would hang out with his bad influence friends. He would get involved with drugs and alcohol, and he would just squander so many opportunities. And he talked about that with the guys, and he just said, you know, make everything count. Make everything you do count, and be aware of what you're doing, because it has an impact on yourself and what people think of you.
I think that's really cool. Like, that story in Maurice Claret specifically is really cool, just because I think it was such a national story that everyone knew about, that it really resonates, because he was such a star when he was in college. But the thing that I think is cool about this in general for Xavier, and what's become a major selling point when they're recruiting guys, is that Fortune 15 program that they've started, where it's basically, it's their idea of Fortune 100 or 500 companies, you know, so kind of setting the players up for business success, whether it's basketball or just in life in general. I think when you're telling parents, like, not just, hey, we think about these things, but we have this program developed, we have a name, there's a marketing thing behind it. They've done a great job of selling that to recruits and their parents. I think that's really helped them.
Yeah, I think Chris Mack started it last year, and so it's components include, like, dealing with the media, dealing with social media, dealing with fans, you know, how do you carry yourself in class, etiquette in class, you know, it's how to really present yourself in every facet that you can, and know that people are watching that tweet you think that no one's seeing. People are seeing it, and they're going to catch it, and it's going to like to haunt you if it's not, you know, appropriate.
Well, like the Cardale Jones situation a couple years ago.
Well, and that's exactly it, because that guy's just, you know, he's a third string quarterback at the time. I mean, you're not thinking about that, but. Two injuries and you're the biggest star in college football, you know? I mean, so those things are important, but I also think a lot of times schools will say, don't tweet, or stay off Twitter.
Yeah.
Instead, Xavier says, let us help you. Let's set you up. Use it as a tool and understand how it can benefit you and lead you to more success and build your brand for the future. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's very important in 2015 because you can't hide from the internet. You can't hide from social media. You're going to be out there some way, some form. It's better to know how to use it than to be making mistakes.
Yeah, Travis Steele.
Interesting about Maurice Barrett. He does tons of speaking engagements. He did 90 last year alone. But he said this one really stood out because really like Coach Mack and thought he was, you know, some coaches will sit in the back room and not say a word. Some coaches won't even show up if he's speaking or whatever. They'll say, tone it down, make it, you know, we want to have just a, you know, a very vanilla kind of conversation there. But he said Chris Mack let him say anything he wanted to say, and it kind of hit home, I guess. But it was about an hour, 45 minutes, and from what I hear, the guys, it was rapt attention. They were not, you know, they were listening to every word bated breath, and then they stayed afterwards, some of them asking their questions. So it sounded like it was really good. I mean, Maurice has really changed his life around, and it was inspiring to hear kind of how he's done that, considering all the challenges he had, self-inflicted challenges.
Back to the top of the order for Team 4, ridiculous. Larry Austin.
Travis Steele just jacked the ball to the wall.
Which means we're going to have to get him on the podcast, because I'm going to tell you right now, I watched him take batting practice a year ago, and there was zero chance he could hit a ball that far. I think he's on juice. I'll be honest.
Does this mean, I mean, do we know that he hasn't moved to the west side and started drinking the water over there and kind of gotten that slow pitch softball gene? Because that was always a big thing that helped me back, because I grew up on the east side.
Yeah. Yeah, so then when you became a West Sider, you're now
a
road grader.
West Side. I don't cross 75. Right?
All right.
This is a crucial at bat, by the way, Larry Austin again.
Larry Austin's second time up. He struck out last time, so.
That bounced on the plate, didn't it?
Yeah, he's up there begging for a walk this time, I think. He doesn't want to swing that bat again after missing twice.
You know, Larry got some, we saw Larry's playing time increase quite a bit down the stretch last season, including, I think he played really well. He was one of the really bright spots for the team in the Sweet 16 game against Arizona. He got some good run in that game. I mean, Rick, the point guard situation is the biggest story coming into the season. Shannon, I know, we've all talked about this. I mean, how do you handicap it going in? Having not seen that
team far, assistant coach Luke Murray.
I would say that Larry would start out as the heir apparent just because he was in the back and he had the most experience last year. But anything can change, especially as we see Edmund develop and how he fits into the picture. But I remember last year, the first game that I got out of it, Larry got in with the Villanova game. Which Mac
sat able.
Shuffled the line of him just to make sending a message. And
that did not go well.
No, it was a bit of a disaster.
No, I still, though, looking back on the game, I don't think, like, I remember everyone was mad that he shuffled the lineup and started Larry because fans felt like it didn't give the team a chance to win the game. But at the same time, everyone came away saying, but Larry played better than I expected.
Yeah. And in fact, the team came back and was, like, chipping away at a pretty substantial deficit, and they played a really great second half and, you know, made it kind of interesting down the stretch, even though they lost. But I just remember him coming in. That's a lot to put on someone's shoulders, and to play against a team like Villanova when you're a freshman and the situation. But I thought as the season progressed, he gained more confidence, which was a big thing.
I want to make two observations here. Luke Murray, the assistant coach. First of all, he's wearing a GoPro strapped to his chest to play softball, which is a first for me. The second thing is that he has now fouled off like three straight pitches into the woods, which means I think they're starting to get low on balls out here.
They're not playing the foul out rule as most people play in softball. We were told that, so that is good news for Coach Murray. But going back to the whole point guard situation, I think the best thing about Larry, having a guy like Larry Austin, is he plays so hard in practice. He's such a good practice player that no matter, while you're probably always going to have guys maybe more talented than him, guys you want to play in front of him, but every year, whoever that is, whether it's Edmund this year or Miles Davis this year or whoever, they have to beat him out in practice, which means they can't take days off. They can't have bad days of practice because that's where he shines. His skill set might not be there. He can't score like some of those other guys. But like in terms of defense and knowing what to do, running the offense, playing with energy, he brings all that on a daily basis at a higher level than anyone else in the program right now. I think that's going to be a great thing for them. Regardless of who they play at the point guard position, someone's going to have to beat out Larry Austin.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing about him last year I thought was kind of interesting. It's very hard for guys to come into the system and they're the star on their high school team and then to sit out and just to be like, you know, playing behind guys, not really getting a chance. And one thing that over and over again that Coach Mack said was that Larry was always very good about being patient and not complaining and showing up every day and doing the work. And so that paid off for him. I think that really was a key to him kind of getting
Yeah, Larry, after begging for that walk, he did draw the walk, and now he has come around to score after
That was a series of mishaps.
The Keystone Cops, a.k.a. Team Able, threw the ball around the infield about 14 times, and everyone advanced a couple bases
it's
there.
It's now 8-2.
We're still on the bottom of the second.
Team Far is not done because we have the Bryce Harper, we decided.
Yeah.
Of Xavier Celebrity Softball, JP McCarroll.
They're intentionally walking in with first base open. This is fantastic.
I'm laughing. That's awesome.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Shannon, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. And we'll enjoy the rest of the game.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks. All right. We're back here at Hayden Field. Team Far has opened up a 10-run lead, 12-2. You know, we predicted 4.5-point favorites. BJ gave us those odds.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're sitting here with a member of Team Able, and if there's one guy who can get Team Able back in the game, it's this guy, because last year he was the MVP of the game, had a 3-RBI triple in the 7th inning to bring his team back. It is none other than Jalen Reynolds. Jalen, what is the strategy at this point with you guys down 10?
Strategy, guys, for now, just keep playing hard. Don't give up. And most importantly, have fun. But hopefully we can get some big hits and bring the game back.
You popped out in your last at-bat, fouled out.
I wasn't going to mention that.
I was going to, because last year you struck out and came back to be MVP twice. So really, this is a better start than you had last year.
It sure is, man. Stay with it. Hopefully I can bring my team back to this game.
Hey, Jalen, last year was a breakout season for you, particularly down the stretch, Biggie's play, postseason, certainly. I know against Arizona, you have opened a lot of eyes around the country. As you look forward to this coming season, what are the areas you've been working on? What are the things you're looking to take your game to the next step, to the next level?
Just staying level-headed out there, man, and focusing on polishing my left hand, getting my footwork a lot better than it is now. And just being an all-around teammate and making everybody better around me.
What was it like that? Because I got to come to practice a couple times early season, and you and Matt Stanbrook used to go at each other pretty good in practice last year. What did you take away from playing with Matt for a couple of years that you use in your game now?
This is IQ on court, man. Seeing everything, seeing everybody, finding open man, and just being patient in that post, because patience is virtue, man. Just slowing the game down and just letting everything come to you.
How difficult of a transition, because when you first, your freshman, sophomore year especially, they're asking, okay, Jalen, come in for 10 minutes now and go all out. And if you get in foul trouble, it is what it is. I mean, they don't want you that, but you knew, okay, I'm playing 15 minutes because there's other guys and it's going to be okay. This year, that's not an option. They need you out on the court for 20 minutes. Is there an adjustment for you that has to be made in the way you play? How do you stay aggressive and stay on the court with that foul?
I just blend in, Brewery.
I'm just watching my temper, man. Just knowing that I want to be better for my teammates. I'm just trying to make the right plays for these guys. And obviously, coming in for 10 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it took to make that extra play, it was a good deal. It taught me a lot. Now I finally have an opportunity to do the next play. So I got to come.
Was there, God.
What was your favorite game last year to play in? What was the one that really sticks out to you?
I would say St. John's. Just being in that environment.
You love Madison Square Garden, don't you? Your freshman year, you made that big breakout game there, too, the double-double.
I've been trying to repeat that.
Yeah, Madison Square Garden, just an unbelievable atmosphere. That place is fun to be, without question. Jalen, in terms of this year's team, being a go-to guy, you knew what was here for you to come back to. But after last season, the way you finished off, the way you played in the tournament, the show you put on, especially against Arizona and some guys who were getting NBA looks on that team, was there any thought this year that maybe you would just go pro now and forego this next year? Or were you definitely coming back to save the whole time?
I was definitely coming back. In my mind, all along, I've been committed to this game, this uniform, the name on the front. I've just been committed to this organization, so I definitely was coming back. I feel like I have a lot to prove to myself and to my fans.
Tell us about some of these new guys. You've seen them. We haven't. Makinde London, especially. He's a guy that you've practiced with for a year. Where is he at in terms of his development? What is he still working on? What can fans expect from him?
friends can respect. I mean, he's an all-around player. He can shoot three. Mid range is beautiful. He can get to the rack. Only thing I would say that he really has to work on in my office is getting strength, getting stronger on the court. In the weight room, obviously, and just being ready for Biggie's play, man. There's some big boys out there.
I imagine he's getting a little bit tougher playing against you and James every day.
Most definitely. You got to make sure you're ready.
Hey, Jalen, I want to ask you one last thing. Towards the tail end of last season, you guys started playing a lot of 1-3-1 with you in the middle of that zone, JP up top. And that seemed to really suit you defensively. You really caused some problems for other teams with your length. Is that a position? Did you feel comfortable playing in that defense? And I mean, is it something you like doing, or is that just sort of something that you need to get through the season?
I would say I did like playing in that position, but just, you know, as far as like getting the job done, that's what Coach wanted us to do. So me with being 6'9", and length in my arms. Just, you know, trying to perfect that pass from getting to the paint or, you know, from the wings or whatnot, and getting that guy to not pressure defense as much. It's a good deal.
All right. Well, that's the end of the inning. You might have to bat here. So, Jalen, we appreciate you joining us, man.
Rims all over the Big East, scared of this guy.
All right, back here at Hayden Field, where this has just turned into an absolute mess. Team Farr up 20-2 on Team Able. And Team Able, at this point, they're just looking for anything that can excite the crowd. So we had Mike Pegues finally getting the ball in play. He bloops in a single, tries to stretch in a double, and dives head first, does a belly flop in a second. Just magnificent athleticism from the big fella.
Definitely got the crowd on their feet. We are now joined by another special guest, the king of all media this summer. Former Xavier basketball player, graduate Matt Stainbrook, fresh back from the NBA Summer Leagues. Matt, how's the summer been? I mean, I see you cropping up everywhere this summer.
Yeah, it's definitely been a hectic summer. I just got back about a week ago from Las Vegas, spent 2 weeks there, and then a week in Orlando. So it's been very hectic. I've been traveling all around. It's nice to get back into Cincinnati and sort of relax a little bit.
All right, now I imagine there's sort of been like increments of your fame, right, throughout your life. Like, you're a player at Western Michigan, so some people on campus know who you are because you're the big guy, right? Then you come to Xavier, start playing pretty well.
You got the bow tie before that.
Oh, absolutely. The bow tie definitely caught on at Xavier first. Then you're on the court, and you're impressing some people, and they start to notice you. After this year, though, this celebrity thing has just blown up. When did it hit you? Give us the example of when Matt Stainbrook realized, everybody knows who I am.
When we had the week off or the couple days in between the first round and the first and second round in the Sweet 16, I think that was sort of a lull for the media with no basketball, and it just blew up.
Was that the Levitard one?
And then at that point, Tom Iser told me, hey, Dan Patrick wants you to come be a Danette for a day and intern. I was like, oh my gosh, what is going on?
Which is pretty, you know, magnanimous of him being a Dayton grad to bring a Xavier guy on as a...
That's what I was saying.
So how was that experience?
That was a blast. First off, all those guys on that show were so nice. They made it really easy for me to come in there and have a good time. It was a fun experience just being able to fly out there and see. I mean, I could have spent hours looking at the man cave and everything that they had in it. So definitely a cool experience.
Just out in public. I mean, here, girls are coming up. Let me take a selfie. You're going through airports. I imagine you're having that. Because I had on TweetDeck, I just had Matt Stainbrook set up in a search just to see what people are saying about you during Summer League. And constantly I see, just ran into Matt Stainbrook in the airport and people are taking selfies with you. Is there a point, have you hit that point yet where it's like, okay, guys, I just want to get through the airport. I just want to go eat dinner. Has it gotten to that point yet for you?
A little bit. I enjoy seeing all people. I think it's a fun thing. It's funny, especially like you said, one time in the airport, someone come up.
Well, next for Team Farr.
Dan Patrick show, McLovin Sport.
Travis,
right.
Steele.
Come up to me and say, hey, man, how do you like McLovin Sport? And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to take that to my grave.
One thing that got around on Twitter a little bit is you tried out for the Lakers at the same time as your old buddy Josh Smith. Mm-hmm. So that had to be a guy you never wanted to see on the floor again.
Not at all. That was the hardest workout I've ever been a part of. It was just us two. So normally with workouts, it's about six players.
Right. Well, were the Laker management just doing that for entertainment purposes? Like, we just want to see the best, most entertaining one-on-one matchup.
I have no idea. And what the Lakers did, they had a morning session and an afternoon. So I think they split it up. Four guard/wings in the morning, then we were the afternoon session. It was tiring. I mean, it was you can't guard him one-on-one. It's like, it's almost impossible.
I bet you still had bruises from the semifinal in Madison Square Garden.
Exactly. I'm not getting in front of that. You can score that one.
Matt, just going back to the whole celebrity thing. I mean, you played through Summer League. Was it weird at all when, you know, I think you played like 6 minutes the one game for the Warriors and came out and did the interview with the starters right afterwards live? Was that weird at all doing that? With, you know, you got some guys ahead of you that are known names as well.
Exactly. It was weird to go from, you know, playing a lot of minutes at Xavier and sort of being a key player to joining a team where you're not necessarily a key player. And, you know, it's a change of pace for me. I embrace it. I enjoy it because I want to play at any level. But yeah, no.
The guys ribbing you at all when you go back to the locker room with a cake and you just did the live interview after playing 6 minutes?
They were laughing. They thought it was hilarious. And they all wanted a piece of the cake, too.
Yeah.
So I made sure they worked for it.
What was it like being around that organization? Obviously, the NBA champions, probably the model organization in the NBA right now. Steve Kerr is turning everything around with them. How was that experience for you?
It was absolutely unbelievable. You know, you sort of say that from going from different teams, you see why teams are successful and why teams aren't. And you definitely saw why the Warriors were successful. I mean, down to them having every type of water and every type of beverage at every practice, to walking into your hotel room and having beer. I mean, they did all the little stuff right. On top of, they had great coaches in Luke Walton and John Collins and all these guys who made it a lot of fun. The practices were really upbeat. There was never a negative moment in practice. Overall, you just understand why they're so good.
You started with the Pacers and really didn't get much of an opportunity. It didn't seem like to show you. The one game, they kind of let you run for a little bit and you did well, but you never really got the time to get out on the court for an extended period and show what you could do. With the Warriors, you kind of did get the opportunity. How fun was it to, like, because I imagine you're sitting on the bench each game, you're like, man, am I ever going to get to show these guys what I can do? And then they start throwing you out there, and like the game against Kurt, you're just killing, giving them the dream shake and everything. How much fun was that to be like, finally, I at least showed I can do it?
It's a blast. Yeah, that's where all I asked for, all I wanted out of Summer League was a chance. You know, I wasn't a guy coming in saying I want 20 minutes or I want this, the ball, you know, touches. I just wanted a chance. So when I got in there, I tried to play hard and play my best.
Up to the plate for Team 4, assistant coach Luke Brown.
They believed in me. Luke Walton was a big fan of mine.
He seemed to really enjoy when you got in there. He was cheering on the sidelines
a
lot.
He's a good guy. When I first showed up, he came up to me and said, hey, I love the way you play. I feel like watching you throughout the season. Like, as soon as you learn to play. So I ended up showing up a day late because I was in Orlando.
Right, yeah.
And he said, hey, as soon as you learn to play, like, let me know because we're going to get you in there. But, it helps when you have a lot of support. And that's also why these teams are
changing. Matt, I think it would be pretty safe to say you'll be playing in Europe this year.
Yeah.
When do you think you'll start looking at those opportunities and maybe moving toward making a decision on where you'll be playing?
I think within the next 2 or 3 weeks, I have a firm idea of where I'm heading. You know, right now my agency is doing all this stuff to feel, you know, offers and talk to different things. So figuring all that stuff out and sort of relaxing, you know, making sure I stay in shape and ready when I get over there. So overall right now, I'd say 2 or 3 weeks.
Matt, you had so many interviews, and it seems like most reporters only ask you when I ask you about one certain question. So I caught a couple other things that you said I want to ask you. I heard you said that one of your other dreams other than playing basketball is to own a restaurant at some point. What type of restaurant?
Well, actually, I don't know if I should tell everyone that.
Oh, you don't want to get out your secret?
I'll tell them.
Okay, no one listens to this podcast, for the record.
Well, it's nothing you can trademark, but, you know, actually, I was in Kalamazoo visiting some friends.
Next up, the Team 4, Captain James Bond.
Okay.
They have, first off, it's, you know, pub food, really, really good food, but then they have this, a bunch of, like, probably 15 different beers on tap, and the price of the beer goes with the demand. So if 10 people buy a certain beer, the price goes from $3.25 to $3.75.
Okay.
Or if no one's buying it, it drops down to $2.75.
Is this based on like an app? Do you have an app on your phone or something?
They have like screens there, and it's a 15-minute timer, and it updates every 15 minutes based on, you know, what they enter. Hey, this person ordered this, I'm going to ring this up or whatever.
It's like a beer stock market.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was such a cool idea. About twice every night, the market crashed. For 5 minutes, every price was $2.75, really cheap. And
oh, awesome. You know, like a happy hour.
Yeah, that's probably when it's nice to be almost 7 feet tall.
Exactly. You're reaching over.
Attention.
Yeah, no, but it is an awesome idea. I think that would be something I'd like. Where the other thing I also like to do, that I want to specialize in one food. So, you know, I don't want to be American food and be bland at burgers, chicken pan. I want to be really good at one food.
What's your go-to right now? What's your specialty?
Chicken parmesan. I love chicken parmesan. It's my favorite food. So I don't know how I'd incorporate that, but maybe I do a chicken breast with different toppings, or, you know, something where I want to be really good at one sort of meat.
Yeah, specialty spot. Yeah. Sounds good. I would go.
Matt, looking back at last season, we don't want to take up too much of your time, but, like, is there a game last year that sticks out to you that sort of was a high point of the season for you personally or for the team?
Then you're off the top of the
sixth. I definitely
say
team
game, Sweet
16
game. Tie, San Francisco
State. Yeah, tie! The obvious tie for us. I think that's where we played pretty well. But I remember, I think it was after we lost to St. John's at home. We sort of met as a team and we talked about, hey, you know, what's going on with the issues? And we kind of went around the team and we were very, very I think after that, you know, we had some losses, but we rattled off a lot of wins. We went into the Big East tournament really, really strong, had a strong showing there. And so that, for me, was kind of a pivotal point in the season, where, you know, D stepped up a ton.
Yeah.
We had a lot of guys who, you know, every game, it was, you didn't know who was going to step up, and it didn't matter. We just wanted to win. So overall, I think our best game, or our high point, was definitely good.
Back in the top of the order for Team Able, Brett Sanders.
Season, we definitely had a good moment there.
Before we let you go, let me ask you about a couple of guys that you played with last year that are now going to be relied on. Jalen Reynolds, obviously, starting with them. I would imagine he's kind of going to be that go-to guy for this team and hopefully replace a lot of your production from last year. How far, first of all, has Jalen come since you first knew him? I know it's a long way. And second of all, what's he going to need to do to be able to be that go-to guy?
Jalen's grown a ton in this, you know, a couple of years here. I mean, from the time he came on campus to now, he's grown as a person, but he's also gotten a lot better as a player. I think going forward, what he needs to do is probably be a guy that's a steady, you know what you're going to get out of him type of player. You know, with Jalen, he doesn't need to go out and score 20 points every game, but he needs to be an impact player every game. You know, you can't have Jalen disappear for a game and show up with no stats whatsoever. You know, but I think he's ready for that role. I think he's a guy who enjoys stepping up in those kind of moments. So I think he's ready to take that on.
And what about James Farr? Obviously, he's going to have to play a bigger role on both ends of the court this year, play a little more extended minutes. Last year, his role fluctuated so much. This year, that's not an option. He's got to be on the court. What's going to be the biggest key for James?
I think the biggest thing for James is being a leader. He's good at that, so that's where I have a lot of faith in him. But he's sort of a quiet leader, where, you know, he's loud when he needs to be, but also guys see the presence that he brings and what he does, you know, sort of off the court. So going forward, I mean, he'll have to lead this team, which he'll do a good job of. And I have faith in his offensive skills, and you know he's going to rebound. So that's something you're always going to be
playing. Right. Any prediction on the point guard position going in? Who starts next year?
I couldn't even tell you. I mean, that's where you could shuffle lineups all the way around, and there's a lot of good players. And, I don't really know going forward where they're going to play, but either way, whoever's out there, I know he's going to play really well.
All right, Matt, thank you so much for joining us, man. It was a pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Best of luck in Europe this year, and hopefully end up someplace with good food.
Exactly. That'd be great.
Thanks, Matt.
All right.
Dan, we're final here at Hayden Field now. 24-6, Team Farr crushes Team Able. James Farr came on this podcast.
I think it was 24-5, actually.
I'm sorry.
I don't want to split hairs. But
24-5. James Farr came on this podcast beforehand, told us what was about to happen. He said they would win by at least 10. They did that and then some, but we are on with one of the losers because that's how we do things here on the MusketeerReport.com podcast. Brutal. Assistant coach Mike Pegues, honestly, I feel like this game probably wasn't as much about winning for you as it was just saving face after last year's performance.
Well, for me individually, you know, Rick, I think I came out and I got some things done, made some vast improvements from last year. Only one way to go up.
I would agree with that.
You know, only one way to go is up for me. You know, one for two, drove one in, a little double. Felt pretty good. Not bad, but overall, team-wise, you know, came up a little short today.
Yeah.
To the tune of 19 runs. Not excited about that, but, you know, hopefully next year I'll wind up with the right guys and finally get me a victory.
Well, when you guys were down by about 18 or so there in that last inning, you hit that double. It really was a bloop single that you stretched into a double with your athleticism. Yeah. You went head first.
You noticed the speed. Right?
You went head. I'm a good evaluator of talent, coach, as you know. You went head first, belly flopping to second base. Were you just trying to add some excitement for the fans at that point? You know, give them something to watch.
I was actually trying to get our dugout going more than anything. Yeah. If the fans got anything out of it, that was a bonus. Just really wanted our dugout to get a little excited, get a little energized, and you know, see if we can't, you know, couldn't get the next guy going. So did my best, man. Gave it a good one.
Coach, your job gets, I wouldn't say more difficult this year, but you're losing Matt Stainbrook. So much production needs to be replaced in that post. What's the key here? I mean, Jalen Reynolds, James Farr, a couple veteran guys. What are you looking for out of the post this year for Xavier basketball?
You know, just looking for all of those guys collectively to, you know, be a year better. You know, I think even Sean O'Meara, who didn't play a lot last year, I'm expecting a lot of him. You know, he had an opportunity to practice against Matt every day. I think that polished his skills on both ends of the court. Obviously, a guy like Jalen and James played more minutes, and I'm expecting a lot out of him as well. Looking for both of those guys to be in the top 10, certainly in the conference, and rebounding. And offensively, I think we have to do it together. You know, I think with Jalen and Sean and James, all three of those guys have really improved, get back to the basket games. You know, all of those guys are also working on the face-up games all throughout the summer, just trying to expand their package. So I'm expecting big things out of those guys. You know, Matt did a lot for us last year in the way of facilitating us from the post, and I'm sure we're going to have those guys be able to step up and do that as well.
Coach, defensively, last year, about mid-season, you guys went to a 1-3-1 for big chunks of the season. I think Rick and I talked about it on the show. They made a big difference in a couple games. How tough is it to get your guys to rebound out of that 1-3-1? And how is it different, I guess, from sort of what you would get out of a regular man-to-man look or your base pack line defense?
Well, rebounding-wise, I just think it's a little different because you're not matched up like you would be in a man-to-man. So it's not a traditional blockout. You know, you're just looking to hit anybody that comes in there. And that's where you get a lot of long rebounds, a lot of 50-50 balls. And, you know, when we are in that defense this year, you know, all five guys have to rebound in concert. You know, guys got to run down long ones. You know, guys whose guards have to come back in. Even JP or Wendy, who's usually at the top of the game, they got to run in and get long ones. So, as far as, you know, the defense in and of itself, it gives us a different look. You know, it's a gimmick like a lot of other zone defenses, but it gives teams problems, you know, especially teams that struggle to shoot threes and, you know, guys that are more drivers as opposed to being, you know, catching shoot 3-point shooters. Those guys kind of struggle. They're not sure who's guarding and who's not. And, you know, if anything, with a shortened shot clock, you just hope that it kind of rattles teams long enough and, you know, into them taking a bad shot.
It's also nice you got two guys that are perfect for that defensive look in JP and Jalen.
Sure, yeah, Jalen's great as the guy that's in the middle of that thing, and, you know, the ball is kind of funneled to him, and the responsibility is just keep the ball in front, and JP does a great job being active on the top level, getting deflections, you know, just kind of playing cat and mouse with the ball handles on top. So guys really took to it, and it worked out well for us. Obviously, you know, at the end of the day, we have to be a really, really good half-court man-to-man team to win in this league.
You mentioned just the confusion and it delaying teams a little bit to getting into their offense. Does the shortened shot clock, you losing 5 more seconds, does that help at all with the zone? Does that maybe add a little bit more to the zone?
Yeah, hopefully, you know, it takes teams that much longer to figure out what we're in and, you know, where they can get a shot from. And, you know, hopefully, as you said, with 30 seconds as opposed to 35, it keeps those guys, you know, puzzled for just long enough, like I said, to wind up taking a contested shot or maybe turn it over. Just taking a bad shot.
Right. You spent most of the last month out on the road recruiting. I know you can't talk about any recruits or anything like that, but one of the things I think is always interesting when we talk to the coaches is what you look for in a player when you're on the road. What are some of those key things, whether they're tangibles or intangibles, that you think you always like in a post prospect? Do you always want to see this from that guy?
Well, I think in a post prospect, you know, obviously AAU is not the best setting for those guys unless you're a really dominant big guy. You know, you really don't get a lot of touches. So you find out, you know, what a kid is really made of. When you run up and down the court, you don't get touches. You know, a lot of kids, you know, play hard or play with effort based on how many touches they get. You know, and, so I'm obviously looking for big guys to compete on every play, regardless of their touches. I do look to see who can really catch the ball, who can finish in traffic, who's competitive and combative. You know, guys, I brought a lot to play. Looking for quite a few things, but I think the main thing is you want a kid with great attitude, plays with great energy, and is a competitive guy that just wants to win.
All right. Coach, we really appreciate you coming on and joining us. Your performance this year, I'm going to say you improved a lot. You might have been the most improved player out there this year.
Rick, I vastly appreciate that, man. I'll take any consolation prize I can get.
I'll say this, too. I had the chance to come to a few of the pre-Brazil trip practices last year. And watching, because you get in that, obviously you were a great ball player at the University of Delaware, played professionally for a while, and you do not hold back. You were in there bodying up with Matt and Jalen and McKinney, who probably wasn't ready for that. So when you see that, I mean, those practices are intense, so it's fun to watch.
Yeah, I appreciate that, guys. You get out there, I think one of the best ways to coach these guys is to get out there and sweat off of that. I think they appreciate that. And honestly, I don't know any other way to do it because, like you said, I'm a player myself. So I enjoy what I do, and I'm looking forward to big things for Xavier basketball this year.
All right, well, they got the Gators out. They're trying to clean up the field. Coach McGee's, I heard there's a meal in the media room. We don't want to hold you back.
No, don't hold me back from that.
Thanks a lot, Coach.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, for the final time here from Hayden Field, Dan, the final score, 24-5?
24-5.
Okay. Coach Mack said that Iowa's a clown for setting the line at 4.5 run favorites for Team FAR, and clearly he thought it was too low.
Well, I mean, Chris is great. Chris is about as successful a gambler as Pete Rose, I guess.
Exactly right. Well, Dan, this event has become a great event over the last 2 years. A lot of fun seeing the players out there.
Yeah.
Good. I think for the fans, if nothing else, if you have the opportunity to come down here, it's an intimate setting.
Yeah,
to be around
nice. It's a nice turnout. Our guy Mario Mercurio is walking by right now. Does a great job with getting gear made up for the guys. It definitely feels like a special event with everything that X puts into this. So had about 100 fans, maybe a few more today.
Yeah, players stayed and signed autographs afterwards.
Xavier celebrities, Matt Stainbrook, Samaje, Andy Mack.
Yep. So, Coach Mack, you coming on? You coming to join us?
Sure.
Coach Mack wants to shut this down.
All right.
Yeah. But it's live. It's hot.
Here
hot mic.
Live.
So, Coach, you told me on Twitter that I was a clown for that 4.5 run advantage that I was given Team FAR. Were you just already understanding that was going to be way too low?
Way too low. Way, way, way too low. You can't. They say if you're going to be successful at anything, you have to have a vision. You have to project positiveness. So that's what I was trying to do leading up. And obviously, it backfired completely in our faces today, and we got our tails waxed.
We know JP McCure is the Bryce Harper of this field.
Wow, that guy can feel.
He really can. Athletic kid. Who else impressed you out here today?
I would say batters 2 through 9 did the damage.
On Team FAR.
For a while, we were at batting practice in the batting cages. Our struggles really, really manifested themselves in the left center area.
Yeah, the rallying cry became hit it to Jalen, I believe, at one point.
And somehow, no matter where we put Jalen, the ball found Jalen, and that wasn't a good thing. He might have been resting on last year's MVP title, I don't know, but wasn't to be today.
Coach, big month of July, obviously just got off the road recruiting. What's next for this staff? What are you guys focusing on the next month or two as you prepare and get closer to the season?
Well, we obviously have kids that are going to be officially visiting over the next month or two into the fall. Signing period will be in November. And, you know, as a coaching staff, we're really in preparation for the upcoming year, stuff we're going to run, stuff we're going to put in. We have a couple more weeks with our players skill-wise to work on their skill level, to get them in the weight room before they go home for about 8 or 9 days right before the school starts in the fall. So a little bit of everything, a lot of recruiting, a lot of guys getting to campus, and then just preparing for the year in general.
You've had a little bit of time to spend with Kaiser Gates, and now you guys get to do summer workouts and things, which is nice. What can you tell us about the newest Musketeer?
I really like Kaiser's skill level. He can really shoot the ball. A little unorthodox. You know, he shoots it very far out in front of his face and sort of looks a little odd, but he has such a good release. He's very confident when he shoots the ball. He's gotten stronger. I think he's picked up 8 or 9 pounds since he's gotten to campus, and that's going to be what he needs to do over the next year or 2 years. But if he can get his body to the point where he can battle in the Big East physically, on the glass, defend stronger players and guys that are a little bit more experienced, he's going to bring a whole new skill level to our team at the forward position.
What about a couple other guys that sat out last year but were with the team in Edmund Sumner and McKinney London? What strides have you seen from them coming back this year?
Well, I think Edmund's had as good of a summer as anybody in our program. He's really made the most of our team workouts. We hold one a week early in the morning, sort of call it our training camp. And I think Edmund's really opened our coaching staff's eyes over the last two or three of those. He's really quick with the ball. He defends at a high level, very similar to Remy, and he relishes the defensive challenge. And if he can make sure that he just makes simple decisions, doesn't turn the ball over, doesn't allow contact to knock him off his drive and get loose with the ball, he could really put himself in a position to play a lot of minutes for us this year.
Do you see him as a one, a two, or a combination of both right now? A
combination of both. He's not a pure one. He didn't grow up playing that way. He's really, really good with the ball. Sort of liken him to Samaje. He's different in some aspects. He's bigger. He's 6'6". He just is very, very talented, very, very quick. And then Makinde, who was with us a year ago, is about 6'9", 6'10". He's gotten stronger, still has to get stronger, has to play tougher, but he also has the ability to stretch from the forward position. And he's going to have to battle because he's got some big guys there, and James, Jalen, and Sean, that are going to want to play minutes, and that's what he's up against.
Coach, I know your focus is on the upcoming season, obviously, but as you, with a couple months behind you to think about the 14-15 season, what was sort of your overall takeaway? How do you think you did as a coaching staff? How do you think you did as a team?
Well, the league was really, really challenging, really difficult. And I think we thought that going in, but there are no nights off in the Big East. You know, when we played at Creighton, if you think about it, we're 8-9, heading in to Omaha, one game below 500. We need that game to really feel good about our chances to go into the tournament. We knew we still had the Big East tournament left, but you don't want that on the table knowing that you have to do something. So for us to go out there and do what we did, Matt and Dee played terrific like seniors need to. I was just real proud of our group, the way that we got better towards the end of the year. We drilled Butler at home, go to Crosstown Rival, you see. That week right there really catapulted us. We played our best basketball when it mattered most, and that's what you want to do as a team.
All right. Well, Coach, everyone else has left the field here. I know you guys got a meal to get to and everything, so we won't keep you any longer, but we do appreciate you stopping by and joining the Dana Victory Podcast.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
All right. Thank appreciate you. It. That's Coach Mack, loser in today's Xavier World Series. 24-5, I believe that was that final. Dan, any final thoughts here from Hayden Field?
No. Great event. Kudos to everybody associated with the program, particularly Mario Mercurio and the other administrative staff who put this thing together, and for letting us come out and record the podcast.
Yeah, hopefully you guys enjoyed the multiple guests that you guys got to hear on today's podcast. This has been another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast. For Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Zipper noise.